Well, it seems like today all the air has been taken out of the room with the return of the hostages.
Yes, and by the way, I'm looking right now, I'm monitoring the situation in Sharm el-Sheikh, Egypt. President Trump's plane has arrived. He is going to be attending an international summit there on the 20-point peace plan following the decision to end the hostilities in Gaza. And this is after the release of the last 20 living Israeli hostages who left Gaza this morning and are now in Israel. And then the president's subsequent speech, his lengthy speech, before the Israeli Knesset. So it's been a very, very busy day, very emotional day. If anybody has seen any of those videos of the Israeli hostages being reunited with their families, it's hard not to get choked up by the major outpouring of emotion that the world is witnessing right now. And Palestinian prisoners have been released, some of whom were convicted of crimes, who were serving life sentences. Others who were swept up in the war against Gaza as detainees, the war, I should say, against Israel as detainees. And so it's been a very, very busy day on the international front.
And you mentioned Trump's speech. We had some audio from it this morning, but it apparently was a little longer than what we thought.
Well, the president has a tendency to go off script, and he did that many times during the speech. Also, there were some speeches ahead of him, so the whole day was sort of shifted back. He's roughly 3 hours behind schedule right now. And so all the world leaders who've been waiting in Egypt to begin their discussions have had to wait for the president to wrap up his speech at the Knesset, the Israeli parliament, and then head to Egypt. One of the things he said when he went off script was saying that the Israeli president should Benjamin Netanyahu should be pardoned. As you may know, he has been accused of corruption, and there have been some discussions about a conviction and the trial and conviction. And he said that Netanyahu should be pardoned. He did make a lot of comments, by the way, talk about going off script. He made some derogatory comments about former Presidents Biden and Obama, as he often does, but not necessarily on international soil. He does that in the U.S. quite frequently. And this is one of the things that draws a line of distinction between President Trump and previous presidents. The attack on his predecessors has not been a practice that previous presidents have done, regardless of how much they may have disagreed with them on their domestic and foreign policy. President Trump did that in full view and earshot of the entire world this morning. He made a number of other speech comments. Some excerpts include, for example, he called this the historic dawn of a new Middle East, an incredible triumph for Israel and the world. And he said to have all these nations working together as partners in peace is historic. And that generations from now, it will be remembered as a moment that everything began to change. He also said, the cruelty on October 7th struck to the core of humanity itself. He said, the United States and America grieved alongside you, and we mourned for our own citizens who were so viciously taken. And he also said, never forget and never again. And again, lengthy speech, often off script, as the president has a tendency to do.
What about the Prime Minister Netanyahu? It sounded like he was... seems not like not just about everybody's praising Donald Trump for the work he did in proposing this.
He did. He smiled throughout this speech, even when President Trump said that Netanyahu is not the easiest guy to get along with. a couple of little personal jabs there, but meant, I suppose, in a certain good-natured sort of knocking kind of way. Netanyahu was loving the speech. You know, there was some discussion about Netanyahu going with President Trump to Egypt for this international summit, but he did not go. Perhaps because the leader of Hamas, the top negotiator for Hamas, was going to be there, and maybe he didn't want to be in the same room with him. I'm not sure. But nonetheless, this is a major gathering that is going to be getting underway momentarily with a wide range of European and Arab leaders and foreign ministers, including from the UK, France, Germany, Qatar, Turkey and Saudi Arabia, and the Egyptian president will be chairing this summit with President Trump.
Well, this is going to be the tough part of this 21-point plan, getting everybody to agree to stop shooting each other.
Yeah, I mean, as hard as this was, the release of the hostages and the cessation of the fighting, it was hard enough. That was excruciatingly hard. But now comes, as by all accounts, even by the president himself, the even harder part, which is building the peace and what happens, as they call it, the day after. And that would include rebuilding a destroyed, reduced to rubble Gaza, helping the Palestinian civilians get the food and water and shelter that they desperately need, and also reconstituting some kind of government structure there that does not include Hamas. As one analyst told us earlier today, the Israeli and the Palestinian people are sick of Hamas. They realize Hamas is responsible for much of their suffering. And they don't want anything to do with Hamas anymore. They usually, throughout the war, there was some support of Hamas, in part because the Palestinian people thought that Hamas was on their side. But after this, that thousands of Palestinians have been killed and the civilians have been uprooted and moved several times and lost family members and other loved ones, they've had enough, and they no longer feel that Hamas is what they want representing them ever again.
With all this going on in the Middle East, and certainly not to minimize that, we still have a government shutdown to deal with here.
We do have a government shutdown, and we're now approaching two full weeks. There doesn't seem to be any end in sight. Thousands of federal employees were laid off. Now, the Trump administration took this as an opportunity to kind of pressure the Democrats to release their hold on this standoff and said, well, we're just going to take this as an opportunity to lay people off permanently, not just furlough them. That, of course, has been challenged in court. Like so many things that the administration does, they get challenged in court, and then they have to wait for a judge's ruling and then an appeals process, et cetera, et cetera. A court filing from the Department of Justice shows more than 4,000 employees were laid off on Friday from various government departments and agencies. When questioned about that on Friday, before it happened, President Trump said that, yes, they were going to be laying people off permanently, and that they would only be laid off from Democrat agencies, which doesn't really make sense when you think about that, because that includes the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, and that concerns the Treasury Department and several other government agencies, and those are not Democrat or Republican agencies, those are just agencies. Now, and when you look at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, which has already been gutted, disease doesn't look at red or blue. Disease is disease. And disease prevention saves American lives on both sides of the aisle. It's not a political thing. So a lot of those layoffs, by the way, among those 4,000 or so that happened on Friday that were supposed to be permanent layoffs, the Trump administration turned around several hours later and called back, I think, maybe a third or maybe as many as a half of them. So it's a way of pressuring the Democrats, who have been standing on the principle that they need to have some assurances that healthcare subsidies will be renewed. Those expiring healthcare subsidies allow people to buy their healthcare under the Affordable Care Act, millions of Americans. And if those subsidies are not extended, if they are allowed to expire, then health care can, again, be out of reach for millions of Americans.
We talked earlier this morning with someone who's involved in from an insurance agency, and just exactly what this is going to mean. And she says, gosh, I hope that they find a way to at least extend these subsidies for another year. It's going to be catastrophic for people who are for example, a family that makes like $100,000 a year, which in this day and age really isn't that much anymore. These people are going to lose their subsidies, and they could see their premiums double.
Yeah, in some cases, I was looking at a survey from the Kaiser Family Foundation, which tracks issues like this, and it said that the premiums could not only double, but maybe go up in some areas by 75%. Nobody can afford that when they're not, unless they are independently wealthy, I would assume. But, I know I certainly couldn't afford it. I know you probably couldn't afford it either. Yeah. So, this is... what would happen is millions of Americans would then be without health care. And then if anything happens and they require health care, they would have to go to emergency rooms. And emergency rooms are obligated to treat them, especially in emergent situations, life-threatening situations. And then since they don't have insurance, who picks it up? Well, you and I have to pay for it. The taxpayer has to pay for it. And hospitals have to, in some cases, absorb the cost. And that is not sustainable. And that's one of the reasons why Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act came about to begin with, because of a healthcare system that was not sustainable. Is the Affordable Care Act sustainable? Well, it depends on your viewpoint of it. But the Republicans have long said repeal and replace, but we've never heard any details or even seen any discussion, by the way, on what they would replace it with.
And my concern here is that the government is shut down, and if the Republicans' position is that we're not going to fund this anymore, we're going to have hospitals. And we're going to have doctor's offices and clinics that are going to have no choice but to close. And that's going to make it rough on everybody.
Yeah, it's going to be a crisis in healthcare in America. And obviously this is something that needs to be addressed one way or the other. The Affordable Care Act did help millions of Americans get desperately needed health care because they were finally able to buy health insurance. It used to be that you could get your health insurance through your full-time job, but a lot of jobs don't offer that anymore. Or, as I've seen a lot in my business, by the way, you'll get a job, but they'll say you don't qualify for health care benefits unless you work 40 hours a week, and then they put you on at 39 and a half.
That's
a frequent practice as well.
Linda, as always, we appreciate your great reporting, and thank you for drilling down for us this morning.
Thank you. You have a good day.